Hello and welcome back to Mess Explores with Xavier and Alan, where as always we'll be looking at all manner of films from around the world. This week we're searching for Sus Domesticus alongside Nicolas Cage in Pig, so... Alan.
Hello, Save, and of course, hello to our favourite fans. Welcome back to Mess Explores. Before we set a foot in search for love, friendship, and our foraging pig, remember, as always, our podcasts are best enjoyed if you've seen the film prior, as we do contain spoilers. As Save said, we are looking at Pig, which is a 2021 film directed by Michael Sanosky. Now, Pig stars Nicolas Cage, Alex Wolff, Cassandra Violet, and Adam Arkin, just to name a few. So without further ado, Save, let's get straight into the film. What did you think?
I was genuinely surprised by this film, actually, and what direction the narrative actually took.
Exactly.
I was of the understanding that it was going to be something along the lines of being a bit more John Wick-esque, and that's sort of what had been indicated to me, and I had no reason to actually think otherwise. But what we got was actually anything but. However, I had held on to this sort of mental model throughout the film, so as I was actually watching this, I was expecting the character of Rob, which was played by Nicolas Cage, to actually snap at any point, which he never actually did. So I do wonder if this sort of false expectation actually set me up psychologically for a very different film than what I otherwise would have otherwise been. And so this sort of heightened my feelings of suspense at time, and the film certainly played on that element anyway, I think. On the whole, though, you know, I think this was a film in an idyllic setting about a man living a sort of self-imposed purgatory and the struggles we all face in our own lives, unbeknownst to most other people. So I'd be lying if I said I thought this was a brilliant film, but my expectations aside, I thought it was actually quite well assembled and I did enjoy it. How about you?
Yeah. Now, when we were discussing what movie to review next week on our show, you actually mentioned this film, and I vividly remember that when you sold it to me, it could be the next John Wick type of film. And I was really inclined to believe you. And why wouldn't I say? Because the poster is menacing with this rugged Nicolas Cage who looks like he's about to annihilate anything in his pathway. And then we have this fast-cut, unrevealing trailer, making the audience feel like it's about to get real. But after watching this film, my oh my, was I wrong in my expectations. Now, if I was to describe this film to someone, I would say it's a cross between a heavily diluted John Wick and Bradley Cooper's Burnt. Now, one of the integral differences of this film is showing us that compassion and serenity are just as capable of achieving the favorable outcomes in situations that are unfavorable to those involved just as much as violence can.
You're completely right, and I actually quite like your comparison there to Bradley Cooper's Burnt. And, you know, I feel like this film goes even further than this, so because this is a film that one could probably consider to actually be an anti-revenge film. You know, it's the antithesis of John Wick, which takes simultaneously somehow both a deep and shallow look at the psyches of men who have lost the most important things in their lives. And it all boils down to their family, you know, whether they be living, deceased, or in the form of a pig. Now, to really sell this, though, the film employed effective suspense and believable levels of anger, which actually felt rational, relatable, and realistic. And I think that was really the hallmark cue for this film, because it didn't go, you know, down that path of violence, as you said. It felt a little bit restrained. It felt like someone that was holding something back. And I think, you know, furthermore to this, it heightened this throughout the portrayal and juxtaposition of the film's visuals. You know, that scene where we see Rob driving into Portland with Amir, you know, it's shown to be industrial, cold, and hostile in direct contrast to the forest, which, despite the dangers faced from the likes of coyotes and the struggles of a self-sufficient life, it's actually calm and natural and inviting. And even the likes of the garish yellow Camaro are a stark contrast to the natural world whereupon we actually first see it. You know, it's alien and out of place, but I think that's in the same way that Rob is almost alien out of place back in civilization.
Now, I just want to go back to the false expectations that you said before, say. You have me wondering whether it was a marketing ploy to reel people in with the expectations of this massive action movie and then to hit us with this sort of heartwarming film at the end.
Yeah, it's quite possible. It is quite possible.
Now, one of the things I enjoy is the layering of the narrative, only to sort of subvert the viewer's expectations when the film gets going. Now, in the first act, opens with our protagonist Nicolas Cage, who's this meek and introverted Rob. Basically, he lives in a cabin with his pig, who he refers to as only as Pig. Early on, we witness them searching for truffles, along with the next scene being him cooking up this gourmet meal with mushrooms. Rob leads a beyond simple life. One without cell phones and even a watch. His only source of income is from the truffles that he sells Amir. Sanosky tells us there's trauma in Rob's life through the mixtape of a woman which he can't bear himself to play. It's this layered build-up I really enjoy, you know, what starts off as a normal film accelerates into a chase for the kidnapped pig, introduction into a chef's fight club in underground Oregon, and a lucrative boss man who controls the supply and demand of truffles, the film goes to a place about love and loss and everything in between, but it achieves this with the use of little dialogue. Now, the film does take some artistic license and showcase expressionistic elements. Now, I'm specifically talking about the portrayed dark world and network of chefs in the region of Oregon. I feel like the Fight Club motif can be an avenue for chefs having an outlet for life and work frustrations, for always attempting to be perfect in their roles, and this is a way of them to be imperfect. The scene with Edgar indicates a moral code and history behind the chef network, and I guess one could even go on to say they even have secrets in that network. What was your interpretation on these scenes?
Look, I had a bit of a strange feeling about the Fight Club scene. On the one hand, it felt like Fight Club. On the other hand, it felt like an arm of the soup kitchen from John Wick. Now, I personally felt we could have done without this aspect of the film, or that it could have been done by better means, certainly without the connotations of the Bowery King played by Lawrence Fishburne in John Wick. You know, I would have actually preferred something more personal and in keeping with the other characters we came across, as Rob touched base with people from his past life. You know, I certainly didn't feel like this was particularly effective or lent much by way of credibility to film or the character of Rob. I would have rather seen him glorified as stoic for personal reasons, rather than merely a means of paying for underground information. Because while this whole scene did feel a bit like, you know, sort of self-flagellation or something, you know, it was that sort of imposing of punishment upon oneself for, you know, not perhaps being perfect in their chef's life, I guess, for this aspect of the film. I didn't feel like that served much for the character of Rob, because while that may have been a past piece of his life, it was somewhat immaterial to his life in the last decade. And so I didn't feel like a man that was already punishing himself and had ostracized himself from the world, there was nothing else gained by him going into another level of society that was sort of sitting on the outside, where people had sort of ostracized themselves and weren't part of society already, because he was already outside of the world further than that Fight Club actually took him. So it didn't really work for me. I feel like had it been a one-on-one setting, then getting that information and just being beaten one-on-one for a person that may have had personal hostile reasons against him would have been far more fitting.
Interesting, because I felt like, once again, this scene and the whole Fight Club trajectory in the narrative was another way of adding the layers that I was mentioning before. You know, it adds another element. You're right, there isn't any need for it, but then again, this film isn't a normal film by any means.
No, but I think the thing is, you know, that character where he sort of initially goes to ask the information and essentially told go away, and he shows up then at the Fight Club later to get that same information, it felt very much to me like there was a personal gripe there. That when Rob had left his old life a decade ago, he'd burnt bridges, he'd made enemies, you know, he'd annoyed a lot of people or upset them, whether it be professional or personal. And I felt like to get that information would have been far more effective had that conflict remained at a personal level and had Rob actually then been beaten up by him essentially to win the honor or the right to that information from the individual that gave it to him anyway. For me, having him beaten up by another random chef didn't really do much for me, because it was impersonal. It didn't do anything for the relationship between the two characters.
Yeah, look, I see what you're doing there. Look, I think what the director was going for wasn't a burnt bridges type of scenario. I think it was more of a, this is a man who's left that world, left the world of high caliber Michelin star cooking, and he's left and other young cats have come and taken over. And I think that scene actually, it's more symbolic of him returning and saying, yes, my name might not mean anything anymore, but here I am to sort of stand up to them.
Yeah, okay, fair enough, I'll pay that.
Look, I think Rob is also filled with ambiguity and warmth, right? Like there are also elements of subdued anguish and fury. There's a weird dichotomy between Rob and nature and how it's presented in the film. Initially, Rob is shown to be a man of few words, but as he's forced into the depths of society, there's an urgency to dig up and to sort of like foster his unused communication skills he hasn't sort of had to evoke in the last decade. He's forced to relive his traumatic past with each step into society he takes. Now, this unsettling emotion is actually mirrored when we see him leave the comforts of the forest to the oppressive landscapes of urbanism. Sarnowski, I guess, projects the barren and inhospitable world of Pig is sort of similar to ours. even though the residents may not know each other and it feels cold, like no one's bothered about their brethren, I guess the only anomaly in the world is Rob and his affection for his pig. But speaking of Rob here, Save, let's talk about his acting and the character development in the film. So Nicolas Cage has done some rare films recently, and I have a feeling that he's just exploring his options and having fun with the films he likes to do. But the beauty of this film is not just in one facet, it's the beautiful marriage of director, story, and acting that gives the audience an eye-opening moment. Pig allows Cage's star personality to be briskly overthrown. In his previous films, critics have described him as full-on, and he's sort of seen as someone who regularly approaches on the strange. But in Pig, he emits this inaudible silence, and there's this premeditated wisdom that as he's affectionately kneads these doughs and eludicates the existence of, you know, tannins in wild fruits to Amir, who sort of clearly is too young to comprehend, you know, that he's in the presence of a masterclass. And it's funny that the audience actually receives a vicious knock to our guts in the scene where he prepares a nostalgic, exquisite meal that reduces the antagonist Darius to tears.
Yeah, look, I'm always on a little bit on the fence about Nicolas Cage. You know, I have fond memories of him from the late 90s in films such as The Rock, Con Air, Gone in 60 Seconds, and The Family Man, which admittedly are films where he is largely a bit more larger than life. But in the last two decades, he has been very hit and miss, and in my opinion, mostly miss. So, you know, I have to admit, this film was a little bit tainted for me from the outset by the simple fact that Nicolas Cage was actually the lead. Now, while I felt he actually executed this role quite well, I'm still not convinced he was the right casting choice. And to be honest, not a single person in this film actually felt right to me. And that was a bit of a shame because, if nothing else, I've always liked Adam Arkin. And I think he's a good actor. And I think he's one of those people that sort of flies under the radar and doesn't always sort of get that notoriety and lead character roles that I think he may otherwise deserve. Now, that may well be by his choosing. But just, you know, on the front of Nicolas Cage, while he didn't do anything wrong, I'm not sure he was brilliant. However, you did mention the scene where Arkin's character, Darius, is brought to his knees, and I did like that. You know, it played on this simple primeval feelings and the power that taste and smell can have on us emotionally and physically, you know, because food can be about so much more than just fuel for our bodies, which is what I think so many of us think about in sort of any given day. But it can be pure energy for our memory at times too, because it can be an experience in and of itself, and that can just bring so much flooding back to us, because memories are experiential, and food is one of those central acts that we do every day, but when it is truly astounding, it is profound. And those smells and those tastes and that sight and that sort of feeling, it can be a visceral experience and can bring things flooding back to us years, decades after the actual initial experience. And I think that was the sort of profound thing that we really saw in this film. It was that visceral, powerful experience that food can have on a person who has sordid memories that is for a life they long for, a life that's long gone and they can no longer experience.
That scene was almost like the ending of Ratatouille, but in real life.
I haven't actually seen Ratatouille.
Oh, well, you're in for a treat. I think I just gave the ending away. No, but you're right. Arkins was brilliant. You know, he's cold and callous and plays villain, but also he is able to show us that he's also grieving just as badly as Rob.
He's human.
Yeah, he's human. And I guess we're shown two characters, two male characters, who have both lost their significant others in different ways, but have processed and taken that differently. We see Arkin's character adopt the persona of this villain or someone who's controlling the mafia truffle trade. And then we have Rob, who's just decided to become a hermit, renounce all materialistic goods and even time itself, and just live with nature as one.
But I think it goes a little bit further than that too, because we have Amir, obviously Darius's son, and he sort of straddles those two worlds as well, because he's got a foot in his father's world, he's also got a foot in Rob's world. And he's got the pain that his father has, in the sense that, you know, his mother is essentially no longer with him in the sense that she traditionally would have been. And so he feels that pain, but I think he also feels a very living and real pain of the fact that his father's become somewhat withdrawn and belligerent as well. So this is really a story about three men that have all lost something really important in their life, and it essentially comes down to family.
Yeah, you're right. I really enjoyed the pairing of Amir and Rob. I think Amir complements Rob to some degree.
It's almost like Omir is the sort of person that still understands the modern world and the social aspects and can help draw Rob back into that.
Yeah, but it's almost like Rob has sort of experienced that real world, and he's sort of teaching Omir that don't get caught up in the
glitz of it.
Yeah, in the glitz of it.
Yeah, he understands the dark side of it and the all-consuming nature and just how dark that world can go and what damage it can actually do to you. And I think beyond that as well, too, because he has lived that life and he is this master that I think Omir doesn't... Well, in fact, Omir is not aware of who he actually is. Rob sort of lends this, I guess, perspective of the wizard, essentially, for Omir. And Omir then comes to realize the presence at which he actually is in is of such high esteem and great value that Omir then has so much to learn from him as well.
Yeah, exactly right. Now, you mentioned that Rob imposes himself, you know, with this self-imposed purgatory. And I think this is something I want to impact when we discuss, like, the themes of this film. Because this isolation goes beyond the realms of character, but also into the thematic notions of what the director is actually trying to convey.
Oh, absolutely. Well, with that being said, then why don't we just go straight to themes and you can discuss it now?
Let's go for it.
Go.
Look, I think the self-imposed purgatory is Rob's way of renouncing his materialistic life and also his trauma. And it's him adopting the art of minimalism. Not only is he happy with just his pig and his skills, but he doesn't need time. And I think that's a big statement to make when one renounces time itself.
I actually like that you said that, because time does come up in this film a couple of times. And there's the point where Omir first rocks up and sort of says, oh, you know, I'll see you on a Thursday, whatnot. And Rob's character is essentially like, you know, I'll see you when I see you. You know, a Thursday is kind of meaningless to me. You know, I'll just have the product for you. And then later he asks about the time and Rob says, you know, I don't have a watch. I don't know what the time is. Time's essentially not important to me. And I do wonder if a lot of this was sort of harking back to the fact that the woman on the recording, who I'm going to assume is his wife, he doesn't have time with her anymore. And I think living the life of a chef, which most of us probably know is very high stress, very long hours, very demanding, and sort of tailored to very specific type of personality, you lose out on a huge amount of time for the rest of your life. You may not have the time with your family and your children and your wife and so whoever your important other is, because you are, you know, potentially at a restaurant for 17 hours a day trying to get these things right for your patrons. And I think this is a man that has gone, I squandered my life being a chef. I loved what I did, but I missed out on the most important things, and that was time with the ones I love. And I think by removing himself wholesale from that world, he sort of got, I have all the time in the world to spend with the one I love, and in this case it is his pig, because he's not watching the clock. Every moment that he spends with the pig is important, it is precious, and he's there in the moment because he's not looking for something to do after that. He's not wondering where he's going to be. He doesn't have anything on the agenda beyond being in the moment. And I think that is such a crucial lesson for so many people, because all of us do that sort of, as Yoda says, you know, never his mind on where he is and what he's doing. He's always looking to the future. And all of us are guilty of it. How many of us waste today in the hope that tomorrow is a better day?
Yeah.
We should be here in the today. And I think that's really what the character of Rob was getting at.
Yeah. It's almost like he's replaced the memory of his wife with the affection of the pig. Like, I think the pig represents everything that he loved, but also a being that doesn't ask for much. So it's a very simple relationship.
Yeah, it's almost like he can just give it all of his love.
Yeah.
And it doesn't ask for much in return.
Much in return. Yeah, exactly right. And it's very funny because he, like, in the film, he says to me, I actually don't need the pig to find my truffles. This whole search for the pig is not about maintaining his source of income, because his skills are as good, if not better, than the pig. But the pig, like, when we see him break down in that scene at the very end, learning that the pig didn't survive the junkies, it's almost like he's lost his wife again, and all that built up, pent up trauma comes back up for him.
Exactly. It's an emotional experience for him. It's not transactional. And I think that's the thing where, you know, Darius says, yeah, I'll give you $25,000 to go away and buy another pig. And it's not about the pig. It's about the relationship.
No.
And he lost the relationship.
Yeah. And I think that's what he's trying to make Darius understand, that it's okay to grieve, you know, because I think Rob has accepted that his wife has died. But for Darius, even though his wife may be still alive in the physical form, in the emotional form, in the cognitive form, she's not there. So both Darius and Emir can't bear to see their wife and mother in that state, and they haven't learned to accept that, you know, she's about to go or she's not there.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that was sort of the important thing about this dinner at the end, because there's two sort of ways, I guess, you could look at the meal that he cooked for Emir and Darius. On the one hand, you could say it was vindictive.
Mm.
You know, he knew the power of his meal and that he would be able to essentially emotionally manipulate Darius in particular into acting or feeling a certain way so that he would understand the loss that Rob is facing and why. But I personally don't feel that it was done with any sort of malice or vindictive intent. I think it was genuinely to help Darius actually experience that loss so that he could let go of it. Because I think Rob realized that Darius and Emir were both holding on to it. They were bottling it up and it was eating them from the inside out. And Rob had found, albeit through very difficult means, how to let go of that pain and how to resign himself to it and to move on. And it may not have been in the conventional sense, you know, in the sense of moving out into the forest and living a self-sufficient life of solitude with a pig, but he was probably more at peace than the likes of Darius, who had everything in the world, material and financially, but actually was a hollow, bitter man that was all alone.
Yeah.
And I think that was Rob's real intention. It was to help Darius come back to Earth and realize that there was more to life and that he still had family. He had Emir, and to embrace that and that they could both be each other's support and strength in the same way that the pig was for Rob.
Exactly. And the film comes full circle because we hear the story from Emir's mouth where he talks about his parents at the happiest moment after this specific dinner. And lo and behold, that it was actually cooked by Rob. And so he recreates that moment, that exact same dish, the exact same wine that he's kept. And he's able to, just for a brief moment, in a couple of bites, make Darius feel like his wife is just right in front of him. And I think that's the beauty of that moment for them.
Yeah, he's connected him to that past good emotion and experience. Yeah.
Say, what a fantastic film. We've talked lots about it, but let's wrap this film up.
All right. So despite this film being a nice film, yeah, I did feel like this film was a little bit underwhelming on the whole. Yeah, I had expected so much more from it. And despite some of my narrative grievances, we did get what was a relatively decent Nicolas Cage film. And he did play this role relatively well. However, as I said, I did still struggle with the rest of the casting decisions on the whole. Now, this film, though, you know, it looked beyond the superficial in our lives to the deeper meanings and reasonings behind our lives and why we do the things we do and how we often make choices that place us in our own purgatory or simply those that prevent us from being happy. And I think so many of us, if we looked at our own lives, even if we haven't sent ourselves off to the woods, we might very well have locked ourselves in our own minds. And we can do this whether we realize it or not. But it's something that sometimes the likes of Rob needs to make us aware of. And we have to be open to that experience. So this film serves to highlight what's important in life and that it isn't material or financial wealth. At the end of the day, it's love and being loved, no matter where that comes from. So I give this film 6.3 out of 10.
Ooh, interesting, interesting. When it comes to this film, say, it's important to just forget about the title. The film isn't really about a truffle hunting pig. What the film actually is professing is a minimalistic indie drama predominantly focused on visiting nostalgia, family and relationships. And as a secondary factor, the restaurant industry in Portland, Oregon. I believe that the director, Michael Sanofsky, who is also the co-writer, has an astute eye for the austere naturalism in nature. With a combination of Patrick Scholar's sensory cinematography, Pig is able to revel at the streams of ambient light that strikes through the kitchen window and enhance the foliage textures of Oregon's fall. There is a no-nonsense authenticity to what was delivered to the audience, and I guess there's a delicious gastronomy to even what we see being served on the plate. And it's for these reasons I want to give the film a 7 out of 10.
Oh, I think that's fair. Well, that's all from us, folks. And remember, you can let us all know what film you'd like us to do too. Just drop us a comment on our socials. But until then, we hope you enjoyed another episode from us. And remember to give us a follow and subscribe on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, and recommend us to your friends and family. And until next week, though, goodbye from us.
Goodbye, guys. Don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe. We'll see you all next week.